This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
True North stores have Primo Eats and Pepsi brand products that are heavy on taste and light on your wallet. Right now, buy any Primo sandwich and add a 20-ounce Pepsi brand beverage for just $1. Handmade every day, Primo uses quality meats and cheeses. Complete the meal with a Pepsi. Grab any Primo sandwich and pair it with a 20-ounce Pepsi brand beverage for just $1. Get more with the True Rewards mobile app. Available in your app store. True North convenience stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
College holds a mythic place in American culture. On the new Campus Files podcast, we uncover the scandals you won't hear on the campus tours. Find Campus Files on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Here's Hoyer bootleg rollout, rolling to the middle, stepping up. He's got Gabriel wide open. He's got it. First and goal.
Cleveland native, former Browns quarterback and Super Bowl champion Brian Hoyer on the Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima. Brought to you by Montrose Kia. Choose Click Cruise at MontroseKia.com.
All right. Brian Hoyer joining us right now this morning. Hello, Brian.
Anthony, Lima, good to see you. A little tip for Jeff. The Chargers will most likely be drafting a skill guy for Justin Herbert, whether that's a receiver or a tight end. So if Jeff's still listening, when it's his chance to take a pick, tight end or receiver, I would go with that. But just a little tip for him.
They are drafting 22nd overall. Yeah. Okay, well, they're going to take a receiver for him. All right, interesting. Very, very interesting. All right, Brian, let me ask you this. How many years did you play in the NFL?
15 years.
You ever have a situation where a player was technically on the roster but not really welcome to play, kind of like what the owner of the Browns just stated for Deshaun Watson yesterday?
Never. I can't think of – I've tried to think back into a situation like that, and I've never had – look, this is a very unique situation, right? Deshaun Watson, the first fully guaranteed contract – it doesn't work out, you're kind of stuck. What can you do? I mean, yeah, you could just get rid of them, but you're still going to carry that cap weight. So it's such a unique situation. I've never had a teammate who basically was like, you're here because we owe you money. Usually you don't have that much money owed to someone, so you can basically say, you know, go on your own separate way. And then to make matters even more complicated, he's dealing with the Achilles injury. So, I mean, if he was healthy, you might release him and say, yeah, we're going to eat some of that in hopes that maybe someone would sign him. But to release him right now, I mean, no one's going to pick him up. And even if that, they're going to give him a minimum deal. So it is such a unique situation. It'll be interesting to see, like, is he going to be around during the season? I mean, I know a few weeks ago we made a big deal about his workout video, and I told you then, like, Deshaun Watson is never playing for the Browns again. It's just not going to happen because of the injury and because kudos to, you know, Jimmy Haslam for going out there and taking accountability and said, look, we took a big swing and it was a swing and a miss, and that's on us. And I think it was relatively well known in NFL circles that it was the Haslams that pushed for that trade. So it's good to see him take that accountability and say it's not on Andrew Berry, it's not on Kevin Stefanski. But you know, he always has the trump card and says, well, they got to nail the draft this year. We got to win this year. I mean, so those guys are in a tough situation. They got to, you know, try to get back and win games while they're sitting there in the quarterback position, which is obviously the most important position. They're hamstrung by the Deshaun Watson contract. So you got to accumulate a group of players in that room that are on relatively low contracts.
Brian Hoyer with us, as he is every week at this time. There's always a great conversation, especially when analytics are involved too, with how heavy they are in that department, the Cleveland Browns front office, which is process versus results. So, Brian, this show, we are torn apart over process. I thought it made sense. I thought going after Deshaun Watson, who I thought was a top five quarterback at the time, made sense, especially with the way things ended with Baker Mayfield. Ken disagreed. You know, we talked about the baggage and the suspensions and all of that stuff, but I thought at the root of it, he was always going to be able to get back to being an elite quarterback. And clearly Ken was right and I was wrong here. What did you think of the, quote, big swing at the time? What did you think of him as a talent?
Yeah, look, I mean, this is where analytics, particularly in football, there's such a human element to playing the game. There's an emotional side, there's a mental side. And my argument with analytics is it's great for when you talk about situation, should we go for it, should we do those things? But there's also a gut feeling, and having been around Bill Belichick for as long as I was, like, his gut was his analytics. Now, he had his guy Ernie Adams, who I don't know how much you guys know about Ernie, but I came to find out this guy was calling plays back in the day with Eric Metcalf, you know, running him up the middle. I remember my dad being like, how are they sending Metcalf up the middle? And I would ask Ernie from time to time, like, what was the thought process there? But there's so much of a gut and emotion side that goes into it. And when you look at the analytics, you can go by stats, you can go by all of those things. But to me, plucking one guy from a situation and saying, hey, we're going to plug him in. And there's a lot that goes into it. There's offensive coordinators. There's the players around him. There's the scheme. It's how you're going to use them, not to mention injury. So to me, analytics is great when you're talking about, you know, should we go for two? The analytics say you're better off going. But when you're talking about, you know, completion percentage and all those things, like, I just look at it from the quarterback perspective. How do those analytics people know what the read of the quarterback is, what the progression is? Did the guy convert the right route at the right time? What was the defense? I mean, you got to understand, like, in a typical game plan, we'd go in with somewhere between 100 and 150 plays. And then when you talk about the defenses getting up to maybe 50, 60 different defenses, the outcomes are almost unlimited. And so to me, to put analytics on certain plays and players, it becomes very hard. This isn't like baseball where it's a pitcher versus a hitter. There's 22 guys out on the field, and offensively at least, you're counting on the other 10 guys to do their job precisely in order to do your job. And I've always said on offense, one guy could mess up, whether it's the offensive lineman, a receiver, a tight end, obviously the quarterback, and the play can go horribly wrong. Whereas on defense, if you're away from the play and you fall and you're supposed to be covering, but the quarterback doesn't look at you, you can kind of get away with it. And so defensively, there's a little bit more room for error. But typically on offense, it takes all 11 guys to execute their job for a play to be successful. And so to me, the analytics is very few and far between on how you can account for all of that.
Brian Hoyer joining us here. And of course, you're giving us some good stuff here, Brian. But I let me ask you this. When it comes to some of the other possibilities that's happened with the Browns, you know, I got to ask you, when it comes to that trade, you can kind of meet him both ways, but does that mean that the Haslams or Jimmy Haslam had nothing to apologize for then? If Lyme is telling me it was the right trade to make at the right time, it just didn't work out.
No, I mean, look, I think what he said is appropriate. Look, there's no crystal ball. You don't know how it's going to play out. And at the time, Deshaun was a top five quarterback. I would say, you know, he had dealt with some injury. That would have been the biggest hesitation. But when he played really well. Obviously, I don't think everybody knew the extent of the off-field distractions. That's another thing that you can't put into the analytics machine. But I think to come out and say that is taking accountability, and it sends the right message to not only the fan base but to the team and say, look, this one's on us. It didn't work out. And that's a part of sports. I mean, you're going to take big attempts, and sometimes it's not going to work out. And I think taking that accountability is a first step in heading in the right direction, 100%.
Let me ask you this. Brian Hoyer joining us here on the show. I mean, you were a part of the organization a couple of times talking about the Patriots. I know some Boston area media that's kind of like, hey, you know, Bob Kraft, a lot of people think he's great, but he kind of lucked into Tom Brady and that whole thing. I got to ask you, you played for both organizations. Are there any parallels you can draw between Robert Kraft and Jimmy Haslam?
Not really. I think to me, when I was in Cleveland, that was Jimmy's first few years. He was very heavily involved. Like, I know that he would sit in on the coaches' meetings the day after the game and would ask a lot of questions. Whereas for me, with my time in New England, Mr. Kraft basically just said, Bill, you got it. Like, you're in charge of the football operation. And Mr. Kraft was around a lot. But it was more just to mingle with the players, get a feel for the team, I mean, to me, he was one of the best and coolest owners I ever was around because he didn't really have to worry about the football side of it, right? Mm-hmm. He hired Bill Belichick. He had Tom Brady. They had a magnificent run, and he can kind of let them do their thing. And whereas, you know, with Jimmy, I think he's so chomping at the bit to get a winner that he gets involved and maybe to an extent where it's too much. And now here he is having to say, look, this is on us. I was, you know, pushing for this trade. It didn't work out. And so, to me, look, the other thing, I was part of the Browns. I was part of the Patriots. I played for 9 teams. I witnessed a lot of different ownership styles. I mean, I was in Pittsburgh, albeit for a short time, but you never really saw the Rooneys come around. But they let Mike Tomlin do his thing. They let Kevin Colbert, or now it's Omar Khan. Just, I mean, I think to me, unless you have a heavy football background and you're an owner, you got to feel good with who you hire to run the football operations and then let them do their job and then see where it goes. I think if you don't have the expertise when it comes to understanding how those things work, and then you start to get involved, and I've seen it in a lot of other places. Indianapolis was one of them. I mean, Irsay would come in and kick Frank Reich out of the team meeting, not the team meeting, but like right before the game, and he'd give a rah-rah speech. I'd never seen anything like it in my life. And God. So to me, I get it. It's they're very passionate about it. It's their family business, all of those things. But you gotta hire the right people, let them do their thing, and let the football people make the football decisions. That's just my opinion. I mean, I'm sure other people will say, you know, they're putting a lot of money into it. I agree. But if you don't know the ins and outs of, you know, how the game is played, how a team is built, then you're just interjecting yourself into something you don't really know.
Brian Hoyer with us. It seems like every week we have kind of honed in on one prospect over the other. And this week it's kind of turned to Travis Hunter, who the Browns had some interesting things to say about him. They consider him pretty much a wide receiver. We've talked about whether or not a player in this day and age can even handle, you know, being in meetings, different meetings all week and playing both sides and all that entails. Just I'd like to talk to you. You, Brian, what have you seen from him as a wide receiver prospect? How good do you think he has a chance to be? And does it make any sense to take him at number 2 overall?
I think he's the best player in the draft. I think between him and Abdul Carter, those are like, to me, and actually I would throw the tight end from Penn State in there who are like, I think will be potential Pro Bowl players year one. I think that's just that when you look at their skill set, what they've accomplished and what they could potentially do as rookies, they're going to be contributors day one. And so to me, I've done a lot of research on Travis Hunter because obviously he's a very intriguing prospect. And the more I watch him as a receiver, the more I see a true number one receiver. I think he has the skill set of a Devonta Smith, a Jameson Williams, and I think his ceiling would be a Justin Jefferson type receiver. I really believe that. And I think that makes it that much more incredible that he's able to play receiver full time and then in college play DB the full time. I mean, he was playing like 150 snaps a game and never really fell off. But when you really zero in on him as a receiver, he's got extremely strong hands. I mean, for a guy that isn't like this 6'4", 215-pound receiver, he goes up and gets the ball and pulls it away from DBs on a consistent basis. His body control, to me, reminds me of I played with DeAndre Hopkins, and Hop was one of these guys where if you just threw it by him, he had an uncanny ability to maneuver his body, and there was a few plays in the season for Colorado last year where Shador didn't really throw a great ball, but somehow Travis Hunter maneuvered his body and made a tremendous catch. And then when he gets the ball in his hands, this guy's looking to score from any distance. And so to me, I think he becomes primarily a wide receiver. And then I think what you do is you have a little package for him, probably on third down, maybe on some like longer passing situations where it's like two coverages. Hey, on this down and distance, we're going to play man. You have this receiver. You just follow him around. And then there's maybe some zone where he plays cover two because he is lengthy. He can jam at the line of scrimmage and play zone. And he's a ball hawk. I mean, this guy, he wants the ball at all times. And so even watching him on the defensive side of the game, he's looking for the ball at all times. He's coming off his own receiver, making interceptions. He's very instinctual. I mean, to me, this is a generational prospect.
Brian Hoyer joining us here on the show. Well, it's hard for me to disagree with you. It really is because, like, you go back to the game against Baylor last year, and, you know, a lot of people talk about the throw. It's like, well, he did force a fumble that kept them around in that game. If they lose that game against Baylor last year, I don't know how their season turns out. It was a little bit touch and go after the Nebraska loss because they just got beat so soundly against Nebraska last year. So I got him credit on that. If you make him a wide receiver, how do you mix him into the defense, though? Because I really think if he's a wide receiver, he just stays there. I think it's very hard to go out and play defense as opposed to being a corner and then, all right, we'll mix in some packages here to keep a defense looking at different things here and see whether or not we're going to use him or whether or not he's a decoy.
Yeah, I mean, and the other thing I should state is the thing that I love about him, and like when you talk about like it factor, just like the competitiveness of what this guy, I mean, he wants to be great. He's like, the conditioning, I'll do whatever I can to get on the field as much as I can. So you have to admire a guy who's extremely talented and wants to work and wants to be out there and wants to be great. This is my perspective, having been a quarterback and offensive player for 15 years. It takes a lot more time to learn an offense than it does a defense. I joke with a lot of the defensive players that, you know, I play with all the time. Like, that's your play call, three words. Like, our offensive play calls are 15 to 25 words. You got to know where to line up. You got to know who you are in the formation. You got to know, is there an alert on the play? Defense is actually pretty simple, especially if you're going to be a part-time player. And so, to me, he would spend the majority of his time in the offensive meeting room. And then, just as we all know, like, There's certain packages, nickel package, dime package, money. You have all these different packages where you basically say, Travis, in nickel, you become the outside corner. We're going to bump somebody in to the inside, and we're playing two coverages. You got cover one, so you're covering this guy no matter where he goes. You got help on the inside, and we're going to play cover two. And so to me, you could really, let's just say he spends 85% of his time working with the offense, 15% of the time would cover a third down package for that week. And that could vary from week to week. But I do think that a guy who played 150 snaps in college almost every single game, let's just say offensively, you get anywhere between 55 and 75 plays if you're lucky. 75 would be like an outstanding game. So let's just say, call it 65 on offense and another 25 on defense because it's third down and passing situations. I think he's more than capable of doing that.
Brian Hoyer joining us on the show. Brian, we thank you very much for the time. We appreciate it. We'll talk to you again next week.
All right, guys.
Brian Hoyer on the brought to you by Montrose Kia. Choose Click Cruise at MontroseKia.com. Choose Click Cruise at MontroseKia.com.